Shri Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem Shri Gaur Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Swami Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Mathura Dham ki jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham ki jai. Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gauravani Pachani Nivasesa Sindhavani Paskatyala Satarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Patakambalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamsha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Bikam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Shri Vishakam Vitansha Panchakapa Shri Vishaki Vishnidhi Abhitapitam Pavani Vaishnavam. So it's Govardhan Puja, October 31st, 2016, in Pretoria, South Africa. So Govardhan Hill is Krishna in the mood of a devotee. So if we could say this together. Namaste Girirajaya Sri Govardhana Namine Ashesha Klesha Nashaya Paramananda Daya. I offer, everyone together, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the King of all hills, Govardhan Hill, the source of enjoyment for the senses, land, and cows. He is a servant of Krishna and is Krishna himself. He puts an end to unlimited sufferings and bestows the supreme bliss. So first we're going to have a little meditation on this verse from the Bhagavatam, which was spoken by Srimati Radharani, according to our acharyas, and which explains some of the glories of Govardhan Hill. She says, of all the devotees, Govardhan Hill is the best. By the way, what time do we end? So you may say, well, we have so many descriptions of who's the best devotee. So who else is called the best devotee? Srimati Radharani. Who else is called the best devotee?
Hanuman.
Who else? Lord Shiva. Right? In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, part one, Narada Muni keeps finding who's the best devotee, who's the best. So, of course, Govardhan is Krishna himself in the mood of a devotee. So who else do we know like that?
Lord Chaitanya.
Lord Chaitanya, exactly. So Govardhan is considered the best devotee, and Srimati Radharani is about to describe why. And we'll see that he's giving his own body for the service of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So she says, oh, my friend, this hill supplies Krishna and Balaram, along with their calves, cows, and cowherd friends, with all kinds of necessities. So this is indication of what makes one the best devotee, that we're supplying all the necessities to Krishna and his devotees. So just like water for drinking, fragrant, cool water from the Govardhan waterfalls, which Krishna and Balaram drink and use to wash their feet and mouths. And honey, pilu juice, mango juice, all different kinds of fruit juices. Fragrant soft grass for feeding the transcendental herds of cows. Caves where Krishna, Balaram, and their friends play and sit and lie down. And these caves especially give pleasure when the weather is too hot or too cold or when it's raining. Govardhan has soft roots for eating. Jewels for decorating the body. Flat places for sitting. By the way, this is a combination of a photograph of Govardhan Hill and a painting. And being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. So generally, if someone touches us with our feet, we don't become very jubilant, right? But Govardhan likes to have Krishna, Balaram, and the devotees touch him with their feet. And there are many great devotees who feel like that. Who wants to become grassed in Vrindavan? What great devotees, do you know? What great devotees say, I want to be just some grass in Vrindavan? Anybody know? Huh? Lord Brahma says that. He said, I'm happy to be grass in Vrindavan. And if I'm not qualified to be grass in Vrindavan, then I want to be grass right outside of Vrindavan. And Uddhava also wants to be grass in Vrindavan. So let's think about that for a minute. How would it feel if Krishna's and Balaram's lotus feet were walking on you? How would you feel? What do you think? How would you feel?
Supreme bliss.
Supreme bliss. So Govardhan also feels that supreme bliss. And it's so interesting that Krishna himself wants to take this position of a devotee of himself, isn't it? You know? Krishna wants this ecstasy of being a servant of God. So in the material world, we all want to be God. We want everyone else to serve us. But Krishna likes taking the position of a servant. So Govardhan Hill shows us how to render pure devotional service, and therefore the devotees pray. Govardhan, may I always live near you. So now we're going to go to the story of Govardhan Puja, which we are celebrating today. So one time, Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men were arranging for a big sacrifice, and Krishna went to them and said, especially to his father, and said, what are you doing? Now, how old was Krishna then? 7, 8 years old, right? He was very young. And at first, his father didn't answer him. He thought, well, this is just a young boy. What does he know? But Krishna said, why are you doing this sacrifice? Is it in the Shastra? Or is it just tradition? What's your purpose? And Krishna said, as he says also in the Bhagavad Gita, that the sacrifice performed in knowledge yields a much better result than the sacrifice performed without knowledge. So sacrifices performed without knowledge we call agyata sukriti, right? Agyata, you don't know what you're doing. You still get some sukriti, you get some transcendental benefit, but it's not as much as if you have sacrificed with knowledge, with consciousness, with intention, as Krishna says, right? Patram pushpam palam 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 me bhakti aparajati. If you offer with love and devotion, you get much more benefit than that's the real essence than if you're just offering unknowingly. So he says you should know what you're doing, and he also said, is this just tradition or is it in the Shastra? So this is a very important question to ask, right? Yes? Do you all know the story of the cat?
Yes.
Know the story of the cat? No? So, you know, in India it's a very tropical climate, and so a lot of temples just have a roof and pillars. They don't have walls. And so there was one temple where there was a guru and his disciples, and during the arati one stray cat came, and the cat started to go onto the altar because the food was still on the altar, and the guru said, oh no, tie up the cat, and at the end of the arati then you can untie the cat and give the cat something to eat. So the disciples did that, and you know, an animal, if they know they're going to get fed at a certain time in a certain place, they come back. So the cat came back the next day, and again they tied up the cat during the arati, and after the arati they fed the cat. So after some time, the guru died, and the cat kept coming, and after some time, the cat died. And then the disciples thought, well, now we have to get another cat, because we have to have a cat tied up during the arati. So this is how just traditions get started. And to say, quite frankly, we have even today in ISKCON some things which have just sort of happened. In that same sort of way, we have some things that are just sort of traditions in ISKCON that don't come from Srila Prabhupada, they don't come from the Shastra, they're just sort of there. So one has to be careful and ask, you know, where is this in the Shastra? And this was something I was trained in the early days of ISKCON. Always ask, what is the Praman? What is the source? And don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to ask. Just because someone's a GBC guru, sannyasi, if they say something and you're thinking, I've never heard that before, you can ask respectfully. You know, Krishna asks very respectfully, you can ask respectfully, oh, that's something wonderful. Can you please tell me the source? Okay? So I've seen even sometimes devotees will print books of stories, and you'll say, what's the source? Oh, I don't know. Somebody told me in Vrindavan the story. So one should be very careful. So Krishna's giving us this example here that one should be very careful, and one should ask, where is this from? Is this just some tradition? Is it in the Shastra? Why are we doing it? What's the purpose? So Nandamar said, well, actually this isn't exactly in the Shastra, it is just a tradition. And the reason we're doing it is that we are agriculturalists, and therefore we are particularly tied to the rain. And therefore we especially want to do a sacrifice for the god of rain. After all, without rain, how can you do anything? I mean, really, everybody should be grateful for the rain, but especially agriculturalists. And he's saying, how will our cows live without the rain? Therefore, this is very essential. Then Krishna did something very unusual. What did Krishna do at this point? Yes. Oh, he didn't do that first. But he did do that. That will be the next slide. What were you going to say?
He used
a karma mimamsa philosophy. Now, this is a very interesting point. Krishna told his father, you don't have to worship any gods at all. Now, what does Krishna say in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita? He says the demigods are supplying everything and you should reciprocate with yajna, correct? But here he tells his father, forget about doing any yajna for the demigods. He said everything's basically mechanical. You do your good karma, you're going to get a good result, and you don't need any person involved. So what happened to our temple president? Is he still here? Or is he running around being temple president? He's running around being temple president. Do we have any of the leaders here, or they're all running around? No leaders here. Anybody? Oh, okay, there you are.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, you're one of the directors. So if we said to you, you know, look, you don't have to thank him. That's not necessary. Everything just goes on automatically. Hey, the person's not important. How would you feel? Would you like that? No. Okay. So that's basically what Krishna said. He said, you know, everything's just going on automatically by the law. You do good things, and then you just get good results. You do good things, you get rain. And what does Indra have to do with any of that? So Indra naturally felt a little offended. We would also feel a little offended, correct? If someone said, what do you have to do with anything? A very mechanistic philosophy. Now, can anybody tell me what the problem is for us as devotees of Krishna, reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, and this instruction of Krishna is in the Bhagavatam? What's our problem? Yes.
It's impersonal.
It's impersonal, but what problem do we have with that? Could be misinterpreted. In fact, if it was literally interpreted, suppose we literally interpreted this section of the Bhagavatam, these verses. What would happen? An impersonal philosophy. A mechanistic, not really somewhat impersonal in terms of Brahman, but it's a mechanistic philosophy. So what do we do with the fact that these verses were spoken by Krishna in the Bhagavatam? Do we follow Krishna's advice in these verses? No. How do we manage to do that? How are we devotees of Krishna who follow the Bhagavatam, but we don't accept the philosophy that Krishna himself is teaching in the Bhagavatam in these verses? Can anyone explain that to me? Excellent. We understand the context, yes. It is extremely important. Whenever anyone, if ever anyone tells you that we take the Shastra literally and out of context, you tell them that that is impossible. We always have to understand the Shastra and the Acharyas in the context. Now, there are some statements in the Shastra by the Lord, by the Acharyas, that are transcontextual. Could you give me an example of some instruction that is transcontextual? Huh?
The primary goal
is Krishna praying. Okay. Very good. The Chatur Shlok in the Bhagavatam is transcontextual. It's equally, absolutely perfect and true in all places, in all times. In fact, that's what Krishna says in the last verse of the Chatrasloka. He said, one should look for this in all places, in all times, among all people, everywhere. That these four verses, four original verses of the Bhagavatam, are not contextual dependent. They are always true to everybody, all the time. But one has to know, like Bhurajan Prabhu asked Srila Prabhupada, how do we know what's a principle and what's a detail? Prabhupada said, what did he say? That requires intelligence. That requires intelligence. Of course, we have the guidance of the acharyas also. Now, sometimes people try to adjust by saying, well, this is absolute and this is relative. That's not the fact. Everything in the scripture is absolutely true, and everything God says is absolutely true and absolutely perfect. But most of the things are absolutely true and absolutely perfect in a certain context. Just like Krishna says to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who has been honored, what did he say? For one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. Then just a little while later, what does he say to Arjuna about honor and dishonor? Be equal poise in honor and dishonor. And Krishna says that several times in the Bhagavad Gita. So first he tells Arjuna that if you've been honored, dishonor is worse than death. And then he says, don't be concerned about honor and dishonor. So if you don't understand that those statements are contextual, right? For one who's been honored, dishonor is worse than death. That's talking about kshatriya in the mode of passion. Becoming detached from honor and dishonor is talking about someone coming to the mode of goodness or coming to bhakti. I was just hearing Prabhupada talk about this in a lecture. One man's food is another man's poison. For someone in the mode of ignorance, you may give them an instruction to come to the mode of passion. But if you're already in the mode of goodness, you don't want to give someone an instruction to come to the mode of passion. Do you follow? So this has to be understood with intelligence. In the majority of cases, we have to say the instructions, even from the Lord himself, the instructions in the Bhagavatam, have to be understood in context. Who's talking to whom about what? Another good example is Krishna telling Arjuna, get up and fight. Is that a transcontextual instruction? Should everybody here get up and fight? Because that's what we should all do right now. Stand and fight. Okay, but forget about this class. Everyone just stand up and start fighting. Would that be correct? No. So there's, of course, there's a transcontextual principle under that instruction, that whatever we do, we should do for the glory of God. But that specific instruction has a specific context. Is this clear to everybody? So this means that when we study the Shastra, we have to study the Shastra under the care of of Guru. We have to study the Shastra under the care of Guru. Also under the care of sadhus, but particularly under the care of Guru. And especially we can understand why a philosophy like Ritvik would cause a catastrophe. Because you want to have a guru who's present in your context, in your time, place, and circumstance, to be able to say, okay, this instruction of the Shastra is for such and such context, and that matches. But this is for this context, and that doesn't match. You follow? It's very important. Like Prabhupada said, you go to a medicine shop, there's so many medicines. But you have to have a doctor that says, this medicine is for you, and this medicine is for you. So without guru, just study of the Shastra is not going to give us what we seek. And even it says this in the Mahabharata, that the Shastra will be confusing, yes? And the Munis will have different opinions. You have to follow the path of the Mahajanas. And one has to have some personal guide who can say, you know, Prabhupada's giving us a course for the whole ISKCON society, but also we need a personal guide that says for us, what is the instruction that I'm meant to follow? How am I supposed to apply the scriptures to my life? So Krishna made this general point of philosophy to his father. And then he said, what did he say? Remember I told you we'd come this slide. What did he say again? No? You said it before. Can you just... Worship Govardhana. Okay, so if right hand, how old are you? You're 10. You're 11. You're not quite sure how old you are, huh? Did you just have a birthday recently?
2 days ago.
2 days ago, okay. Do we have any 7 or 8 year olds here? How old are you, sir, over there? Yes, you. You're 8. Okay, so would we, and what's your name, sir?
Katleho.
I'm sorry.
Katleho.
Katleho.
Katleho. Okay, so would we let Katleho manage the temple? What do you think?
Yes.
You would. Okay, so if Katleho said, okay, we're not going to do this program, we're going to change the whole program, would everybody do that? What do you think? Probably not, right? So how is it that this little 7, 8 year old boy, Krishna, he says to his father, everything you're doing for Indra, just do it for Govardhan. And Nanda Maharaj says, oh, we'll do a separate sacrifice later. Probably like Prabhupada's father did a little child's Rath Yatra for him, right? So little child of Vaicharani and this little child Rath Yatra. So probably Nanda Maharaj was thinking like that. We'll just do a little child sacrifice for Govardhan later. And Krishna said, no, that's going to take too long. You know, for little children, everything takes too long, right? They don't have a very good concept of time. Oh, it's going to take too long. Can't we do it right now? Let's just take everything that we had for Indra and use it for Govardhan right now. So Nanda Maharaj just says, okay. Why would he do that? Why does Nanda Maharaj say okay? Out of love. This is what Krishna says, means when he says, Sarva Dharman Prachajamam Ekam Sharanam. By the way, can you guys see the screen from over there? Katleho, can you see the screen? You sure? Because you can sit up here. So out of love. All of us want that. We all want to have love conquer logic. We all want to be so crazy, we call it crazy in love, madly in love, right? Do we say that? You fall in love. Somebody once asked, how come Krishna can't fall down? How come only the jivas can fall down? Why can't Krishna? He does. He falls in love with Radharani. And Rupa Goswami says when he sees Radharani, he gets so addled, he starts trying to milk a bull. So Krishna's devotees, their hearts melt in love for Krishna, and Krishna's heart melts for his devotees. And we're all looking for that in this world. Of course, in this world, if you lose your mind in love, it's not very favorable, correct? When you fall in love with somebody, or sometimes we fall in love with a group or with an ideology or with a sports team or something like that, and we lose our intelligence, that's not very favorable. But with Krishna, it's very favorable. And that's what we're all looking for. At the same time, I think I can say we're all a little afraid of it, isn't it? We're all a little afraid of it. If we want to know why does bhakti yoga take so long, it's because we're all a little hesitant to have our heart melt for Krishna. And if Krishna said to any of us, you know, look, just worship the hill over here. Most of us would say, really? You know what you're talking about? You're just a little kid. So this is our difficulty. We want to come to the point where we love Krishna so much that we just say, okay. So Nanda Maharaj just said, okay. We're going to worship a hill instead of Indra. Now, I'm sure that some of the residents had some idea that Indra might not exactly be happy with this. But they went ahead anyway. Just said, okay, Krishna, whatever is the consequence, I'm going to do. And this is Atmanivedanam. Atmanivedanam is Krishna, I'm going to do what you want, and whatever consequences are there, they're there. I'm just going to please you. So now Krishna starts giving all the details about how to have the sacrifice, which is also, again, very interesting. You know, you had all the Brahmins there who were doing the yajna, and this little boy is just going to tell them what to do. He's just directing the whole show. And everyone in Vrindavan, the Brahmins also, they're just, okay, Krishna. So Krishna says, let's cook many different kinds of food, from sweet rice to vegetable soups. And the Brahmanas have to invoke with sacrificial fire. Then we should feed the priests and reward them with cows and other gifts. Now, it's very important, by the way, to feed the priests. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that sacrifice without remuneration to the priests is in the mode of No, ignorance. And in fact, it was, who was it? He was Hiranyakashipu, who said that you should make sure that you destroy any sacrifices where the priests are enumerated. Because if you do that, you'll destroy Vedic culture. You know, we sometimes have discussions in ISKCON whether or not devotees should be paid. Yes, this is a long-standing discussion. So the answer is that a brahmana should never ask for anything, but people should voluntarily give. If you have some sacrifice with a brahmana, you don't voluntarily give, it's in the Modi news. Now, there's no way you can see the screen from that corner. That's not possible. Unless you have some kind of transcendent vision. You're welcome to sit up here. Or do you need a chair? Do you need something to lean on? If so, maybe someone could get this lady a chair so she could sit over there and also see the show. So after that, he says, after giving food to everyone else, including such fallen souls as dogs and dog eaters, then you should give grass to the cows. Could we have some chairs there so people don't have to? Okay, great, fantastic. Thank you, sir. Isn't this a nice picture of Krishna leading his cows around Govardhan Hill? Then he says, then present your respectful offerings to Govardhan Hill. So who's ever been at Govardhan for Govardhan Puja? Anybody here been at Govardhan? Yeah, okay, one person. Well, we have a photo at the end of our presentation of offering food to Govardhan Hill. Then Krishna says, dress and decorate yourselves handsomely and then circumambulate the cows, the brahmanas, the sacrificial fires, and Govardhan Hill. So I see some of you have followed Krishna's instructions to decorate yourselves very beautifully. Very nice. That lends a very festive atmosphere. By the way, in Gopal Champu, written by Jiva Goswami, Krishna says you can circumambulate Govardhan even in a car. Carriage, well, obviously not a internal combustion engine car, because they didn't have those. But even in a cart. So this idea that you have to go barefoot and walk is not supported by Jiva Goswami. Could the gentlemen all move up about half a meter to a meter so the people coming in have a place to sit? So here on this slide, you see a photograph, yes? Everybody can see the photograph here? I don't know if you can tell that Bhakti Tirthaswami is in that photograph. So this is from our Gurukul in North Carolina. And for many, many years there, we had a big Govardhan Puja festival. Maybe another chair. What we could do, Prabhuji? If you could put that maybe by the door, then she could sit on the chair by the door and she could still see the screen. That would be good. So we would make we used to make a hill out of paper mache, so the children had a project that went on for about 2 to 4 weeks, and the children would decorate it. And then we invited the whole community, and we would circumambulate Govardhan Hills. And this is the time that Bhakti Tirthaswami came. Then, of course, Govardhan Hill appeared as Krishna. And Krishna was there with the devotees, worshipping himself as the hill. And everybody was so very happy then. You know, because first when Krishna says, okay, everybody worship Govardhan Hill, I'm sure a few people were thinking, well, that's kind of interesting. But then Krishna showed that Govardhan Hill is he himself. Now, as everybody was circumambulating Govardhan Hill, again from Gopal Champu of Jiva Goswami, they were singing a wonderful song. Now, when I visited our farm in Hungary at New Vrajdam, they have all the devotees, when they circumambulate Govardhan Hill, they sing this song. They have it printed out. So everybody carries a printout of the song. And usually the way they do it is the men ask the question and the ladies answer. Have you been there for that? Have you seen that?
My former husband told me.
It's wonderful. And then the ladies ask the question and the men answer. And this is the song that they sing going around Govardhan.
Thank you.
And here we have a nice quote from Krishna book. The identity of Krishna and Govardhan Hill is still honored, and great devotees take rocks from Govardhan Hill and worship them exactly as they worship the deity of Krishna in the temples. The followers of the Krishna consciousness movement may therefore collect small rocks or pebbles from Govardhan Hill and worship them at home, because this worship is as good as deity worship. And here you see a photograph of Lord Chaitanya's Govardhan Shila, which was given to Raghunath Das Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Govardhan Shila. And we have some of our, a few copies, only five copies, of our Manashiksha book by Raghunath Das Goswami. And this is the picture we have on the cover of Lord Chaitanya giving this Govardhan Shila to Raghunath Das Goswami. Actually, this Manashiksha, which we don't have time to teach here in Praetorian, but it's full of descriptions of Govardhan and directions to worship Govardhan and association with Govardhan. So it's a really nice book that we have here for Govardhan Puja. So at this point in the festival, everybody was very happy. We followed Krishna's instructions, and everything was just wonderful. We had this huge festival, and they all went home. But somebody was not very happy.
Just see the impudence of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. They are simply inhabitants of the forest. But being infatuated with their friend Krishna, who is nothing but an ordinary human being, they have dared to defy the demigods.
So Indra said, they've defied the demigods. Now really, the only person they defied was him. So we often do this, right? When somebody insults us, we make it some big principle that they violated, isn't it? Because we don't want to say it's about us. So there wasn't really an offense to me. It was really, you know, they're not respecting Prabhupada or something. You know, we make it into something like that. And so Indra took this as a personal insult. Now, it sort of kind of was a personal insult. However, what he forgot is that the person who decided that he shouldn't be worshipped was his master. If your master decides that you don't be worth, that you're not worshipped, that's not an insult. That's a direction. And Indra responded way out of proportion. He decided he was going to call the clouds that destroy the universe. So Indra's now really overreacting. You know, I in my years in the Hare Krishna movement, I've met a lot of people who are offensive to devotees, but I never met anybody who wanted to destroy a whole community, you know, just because they were insulted. And clouds were blazing with lightning bolts. They were roaring with thunder. They were hurling down hailstones. There was rain as thick as columns, and the earth was submerged in a flood. Now, we sometimes think that if I follow Krishna's instructions, then everything should work out right, right? But here, the residents of Vrindavan followed Krishna's instructions, and there was catastrophic devastation. Which just tells you that there's not a direct one-to-one correlation between everything working out nicely on the external platform and pleasing Krishna. And the mood of people who worship God so that everything will turn out nicely on the material platform, that's really karma kanda. I'm going to worship God and He's going to make my life nice. So then it's really about who? Who's it about? About me. I worship God and He makes my life nice. So that's not love. That's something else. And people become atheists when they worship God and something bad happens in their life. But the residents of Vrindavan, when they followed Krishna's instruction and the result was complete devastation, did they get angry at Krishna? In fact, they asked Krishna for help. Now again, this is interesting. He's just a little boy. And all the residents of Vrindavan, they go to him and they ask him for help. They say, Govinda, Govinda, please give us shelter. So Krishna's thinking and he says, by my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. When I break the false prestige of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. So the only happiness in this world is in the mode of goodness. There is some material happiness in the mode of goodness, and there's transcendental happiness, of course, in bhakti. And if there's a devotee of Krishna, they're supposed to be in goodness or in bhakti. They're not supposed to be in passion or in ignorance. In fact, Prabhupada said, if you're not joyful, you're not really a devotee, you're just a pretender. So if Krishna sees that one of his devotees are not happy, because you can only be happy in goodness. Happiness comes really from within. It comes from, in goodness, it comes from a sense of equilibrium and balance and detachment and harmony. In bhakti, it comes from love. And if Krishna sees one of his devotees isn't happy, he wants them to be happy. Please understand, Krishna wants us to be happy. If he sees that we're in passion and ignorance, we can't be happy, and he wants us to be happy. So he smashes the passion and ignorance. We don't like that very much, because passion and ignorance are where our false ego is. So Krishna says, I don't like it that my devotee Indra is not happy. He's all upset. When we feel someone's insulted us, we're not very happy, correct? He says, I don't want this. So I'm doing this to bring Indra to the mode of goodness. That's his purpose, to bring him relief. He said, so I need to give relief to Indra, and I also need to protect the cowherd community because I'm their shelter, their master, and they are my own family. All right, so if it was a flood and you were in charge of protecting everybody, what would you do? You'd bring them to higher ground, right? You'd get them out of the area, bring them to higher ground. And if you had great mystic powers, then you might kill Indra. Or you might disempower him in some way. Like Charvana Muni, what did he do to Indra? You remember? Charvana Muni paralyzed Indra's throwing arm. Indra's thunderbolt arm. Krishna could have done that. He could have paralyzed Indra's arm. He could have just disempowered him. He could have killed him. But he didn't. He let Indra go on, do whatever he was doing. Correct? And Krishna didn't take everyone to higher ground. He did something very interesting. He picks up a mountain. Is that what you would expect somebody to do for a flood? That's what he did. He said, here's an umbrella. It's raining. There's an umbrella. Okay. Then he tells everybody, he says, if you wish, you may now come under this hill with your cows. So would you do that? Would you have the courage and the faith to come under a huge hill being held by a little boy with his little finger? This is the level of surrender and trust of the residents of Vrindavan. Then Kavi Karnapur says in Ananda Vrindavan Champu that generally a large cowherd community, which included many thousands of cows, calves, bulls, and so on, could not fit under the base of a medium-sized hill like Sri Govardhan. However, because the hill was an ecstasy, being touched by the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it acquired inconceivable power and even felt the hundreds of deadly thunderbolts thrown upon its back by angry Indra to be offerings of soft, fragrant flowers. At times, Sri Govardhan was not even aware that the thunderbolts were striking. So Govardhan was in so much ecstasy, expanded to be an umbrella for everybody, and he felt the thunderbolts either not at all, or he felt them like flowers. This is what Krishna talks about in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita when he says how to get relief from material miseries. And this is what Rupa Goswami talks about when he says that bhakti relieves us from material miseries. It does not, my dear friends, mean that when you do bhakti, that Krishna starts saying, all right, let's see, I'm going to make this person a millionaire, they're going to have the perfect spouse, they're going to have perfect health, you know, nothing's ever going to go wrong in their life materially. That's not the promise. The promise is you won't feel the miseries as miseries. You won't feel the miseries as miseries. You will not feel them as pain. They'll just be interesting. Oh, that's something interesting. Seriously. And this is possible. This is not impossible. Generally in this world, please try to listen carefully, because this is a very important point that will help us, all of us, a lot. Generally in this world, when things are going to be pleasing for our mind and our senses, we grab them, huh? We grab them, and we try to hold on to them as long as we possibly can. And when things are displeasing for our mind and our senses, we push them away. We try to get rid of them as quickly as possible. This grasping and this pushing is our problem. If you neither grasp nor push, just leave it. Like rivers flowing into the ocean, you just leave it. Then you don't experience suffering. Of course, you don't experience material happiness either, which is why we don't want to do this. But one will experience, when one stops grasping and pushing, one will experience a happiness beyond the senses and the mind. But you can't say, first I want to experience that happiness, then I'll start grasping and pushing. You have to leave it. You have to let the material things, the urges of the mind, just let them come and go without either grasping them or pushing them, without responding to them. Now, we often think that we have to respond. In fact, we usually don't see a gap between the stimulus and our response. But if we are chanting Hare Krishna properly, if we are engaging in bhakti properly, we will become aware that there is a gap between stimulus and response. And we can let the things in this life go on without our responding to them at all. That we only have to try to please Krishna without any anxiety for them. And then we will either not notice the difficulties of this world, or we will not notice them as pain. We may still have to put, you know, petrol in the car and food in our stomach, but we will not notice things as pain. So it says in the Bhagavatam that by continuously drinking the nectar of the beauty and sweetness of Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan felt no hunger, thirst, or fatigue, and Lord Krishna, by seeing their beautiful forms, also forgot about eating, drinking, and sleeping. Now, in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, Kavi Kanapur says that there was a whole realm under Govardhan Hill. There was a whole heavenly realm that appeared under the hill for the residents of Vrindavan. But the Bhagavatam just simply says that nobody was interested in eating, sleeping, or drinking. They were just so happy to see Krishna. It wasn't like when we're fasting or saying, oh, when is it breakfast time and I can drink some water again? It wasn't like that. But they were just feeling completely satisfied on the spiritual platform. Of course, it says Mother Yasoda was a little anxious about whether or not Krishna had anything to eat. And she was anxious about him just using one hand. And she said, why don't you switch hands? I can massage your hand. The cowherd boys and men were saying, maybe we can help, right? So meanwhile, Indra's just going on. 7 days, Indra's going on. Do we often do this? Right? We just, our false ego's just fighting for days and days and hours before we finally figure out, wait, maybe I should surrender to Krishna. So he's going on and on and on. And after a week, he says, maybe I made a mistake. You know, he's pulling out all his power. He's pulling out the power to destroy the universe. And Krishna's defeating him with his little pinky of his left hand. So he thinks, you know, maybe this wasn't such a good idea. So then Indra stops, and the storm stops. And then Krishna restores everything. There's no, you know, lasting flood damage or anything. Everything was restored. And he says, everybody, you can now leave the hill with your cows and your possessions, and you can go back home. Then while everybody looked on, Krishna put back the hill in its original place, just as it had stood before. At this time, the demigods became very happy. The residents of Vrindavan, overwhelmed with ecstatic love, they came forward to greet Krishna according to their individual relationships. And the demigods sang his praises and showered flowers. A great universal festival took place. The demigods played their conch shells and kettle drums, and they began to sing. So Indra felt he needed to apologize. What do you think? Do you think he needed to apologize? If you tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan and destroy Vrindavan just because you felt insulted? So it was a pretty heavy thing that he did. And he asked Lord Brahma, who said, you better bring a devotee with you. So he brought Suravi with him. And he came to apologize. Krishna let him apologize privately. Of course... Oh, sorry. I should have turned off my phone. So in one sense, Indra's humiliation was public, but that was Indra's fault, right? Because he was the one who had a public display of trying to destroy Vrindavan. That wasn't Krishna's fault. But Krishna let him apologize in a public place, in a private place. And he came with Airavata, who showered Krishna with Ganga Jal. And Indra was very ashamed. He fell down and lay his helmet, which was brilliant as the sun, at the Lord's lotus feet. And Indra had a very nice apology here. He said, I was very proud in my ruling power. I was ignorant of your majesty, and so I offended you. Will you please forgive me? He said, my intelligence was bewildered. Please don't let my intelligence and my consciousness become impure like this. So what was nice is that Indra recognized the root of his problem. He recognized the root was his pride. He didn't make excuses. Right? He just said, I messed up. I was proud. So now, if one of the devotees here tried to kill everybody at the temple and burn down the temple or flood the temple because they felt insulted, what would we do? What would we do with that devotee? Huh?
Lock him up.
Lock him up. Okay, we have the police lock him up. What else might we do with that devotee? I mean, what would you expect Krishna was going to do with Indra?
Chastise
him. Yeah, chastise him how? Like what?
Banish him.
Banish him. What else?
Take away his powers.
Take away his powers, take away his position. He didn't do any of that. He said, Indra, I wanted you just to always remember me and be in transcendental ecstasy. He said, if someone's blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence, then they don't see me. If we don't see Krishna, by the way, that's why. He said, execute my order and remain in your position without false pride. He kept him there. He didn't remove him. So it's not only that Nanda Maharaj and the residents of Vrindavan have a melting heart for Krishna. Krishna has a melting heart for his devotees. He says, apichet sucharacharo. You know, we read this verse and we're like, what? Even if my devotee does sinful things, he's still saintly? How does that work? But Krishna, now we shouldn't take advantage of this. If we take advantage of this, that's an offense. If we think, well, you know, I'll do bad things and then I'll just come to Krishna and his heart will melt. Then I can go do them again and his heart will melt again. And Prabhupada says, you can do that 2 times, 3 times. And then Krishna will say, enough. But Krishna does have a very melting heart for his devotees. Oh, you love me? Okay, it's all right. It's all right. That's his mood. So then Surabhi bathed Krishna with milk, and Indra was bathed with Ganga water, and Krishna received the name Govinda. But Krishna was also the Indra, the ultimate Indra. And at that point, all living creatures, even those naturally inimical by nature, became free from envy. So we have some photos here of different Govardhan Puja festivals. You'll see in these photos, there's one of our farm in Hungary where they offer 2,000 kilos of sweets to Giriraj, and it fills up literally a space as big as this room. And one year when I was, I've been there 2 or 3 times for Govardhan Puja, one year when I was there, they have a Giriraj about the same size as the Shila here. And they put him in a boat, and they put him in this ocean of sweets. Of course, they have to distribute it to all the people in the local village. There's so many sweets. You'll also see a photograph of our Govardhan Puja Festival in America years ago, where my Shila's on top of the hill. And you'll see one at Govardhan himself with the festival there.
All the people of Vrindavan, for your good fortune. All the people of Vrindavan, for your good
I'd like to end with us singing a prayer for Govardhan. And first we can just listen. Okay, do you think we can sing it? Okay, everybody? Giri Nirpahari Dasya Shreni Varyeti Nama Mritamida Muditam Sri Radhika Vaktra Chandrat Rajanavati Lakatve Klipta Veda Isputame Nijam Niketani Vasam Dehi Govardhan Tvam. You can read English. O Govardhan, O King, everyone together. O Govardhan, O King of Mountains, O Hill whose nectar name, the best of Lord Hari's servants, flows from the moon of Sri Radha's mouth. O Hill that the Vedas declare to be the Tilak marking of Raja, please grant to me residence near you.